A Different Kind of Power, a memoir. This is the author, Jacinda Ardern. To the criers, warriors, and huggers. Prologue. It was a standard bathroom, the kind you'd find in a 1950s timber home just about anywhere in New Zealand, with a dark linoleum floor and a small hand basin. Enough of a bowl to wash your hands, but not enough to contain all the water while you do it. I'd pulled the lid down over the toilet and was sitting on top of the hard plastic, waiting. My heart beat a little faster than usual. On the other side of the door, I could hear my friend Julia moving around her kitchen, roasting pans hitting the side of the sink, plates clinking against one another as she stacked them. She was likely scraping away the remains of yet another dinner I'd only pushed around my plate. This time, chicken with roasted kumara, pumpkin, potato, and fresh green beans. Julia was an excellent cook. I was just a nervous eater, especially now. For the past 7 weeks, I'd been living on a diet of cheese, crackers, and my mother's homemade bliss balls, giant, energy-laden lumps of pureed dates, cashews, and chia seeds that had a tendency to take up residency in my front teeth. That might be fine if these golf ball-sized snacks were being eaten in the privacy of my own home, but I'd been eating them on the road, in the middle of a campaign to determine whether I would become the 40th Prime Minister of New Zealand. Weeks had passed since election night, and I still couldn't answer that question. But at this particular moment, sitting in Julia's bathroom, that wasn't the question I was waiting to answer. I glanced down at my phone. Just a few more minutes. That night at Julia's was meant to be a break, a chance to catch my breath while my partner Clark was away filming a TV show up north. I still had on my black and white sneakers, lycra leggings, and purple hoodie. As soon as I dragged my overnight bag through the door of my friend's home, I changed out of my work clothes. Then she and I had walked through the park near her house in the cool air of the late afternoon. I couldn't face another night in my small studio apartment in the city, the one I had lived in when doing government work in Wellington, not after the long days of negotiating and waiting. On election night, both of New Zealand's two major political parties, the Conservative National Party and the Progressive Labour Party that I led, finished without a clear majority. That meant that neither leader could form a government yet. For one of us to win and become Prime Minister, we'd need to build a coalition with a smaller party called New Zealand First. And so, for the last 8 days, both parties had been in talks to determine whom they would pick. For all the back and forth in the negotiations, for all the discussion about which policies we would implement and which we wouldn't, the calculation was actually simple. Either New Zealand First would choose the National Party, or they would choose us. After each meeting, I would leave with pages of notes, but it was the body language I was watching, a nod of the head, eye contact, something, anything that would tell me what their choice would be. But there was nothing. The media diligently reported on the talks each night. They too had no insights on what might happen, and so kept repeating what I already felt deeply. The stakes are high. But the stakes felt huge throughout the campaign. After all, I was 37 years old. I'd been the leader of my party for less than 80 days. And when the campaign started, we'd been trailing by more than 20 points. We were never meant to win, and I was never meant to be leader. I pulled up my leggings, fidgeting. Surely time's up. I glanced down at my phone. One more minute. My whole short life, I had grappled with the idea that I was never quite good enough, that at any moment I would be caught short, and that meant, no matter what I was doing, I had no business doing it. That's why I believe mine was a personality better suited to work behind the scenes. I was the worker who quietly and steadily got things done. I wasn't tough enough to become an actual politician. My elbows weren't sharp enough. My skin was too thin. I was idealistic and sensitive. Becoming a Member of Parliament, I was certain, had been happenstance. But it turned out my fear of failing, of letting people down, was overshadowed by a grinding sense of responsibility. And so, as unlikely as it had once seemed, I became the deputy leader of my party, then leader, and now, possibly, the next Prime Minister.